Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Okay, well, for the director's cut, we have a pretty good story about what just happened. For the director's cut edition.
Very well done. Yes.
Like I don't know. I'll just say it, right?
Yeah, sure.
So Joe does a tremendous job for us. And is this Luke? Okay. Well, the story can wait. I'll tell the story, but it's good. The story can wait. The important part is what I just said. Joe does a tremendous job for us. Joining us now on the West Her Hotline is Luke Fox of Sportsnet. It gives me extra pleasure to tell you that on Twitter you can find Luke at Luke Fox Jukebox. That's really good. And Luke, also, I'm just going to pile on here. You put weaponize as the first word of your column and in the headline. I am reading that column. Love it.
That was that's an old headline writing trick. Put a exciting word like that and people will click on, and then they'll be vastly disappointed that I'm just talking about boring things like NHL salaries.
Right.
No, that's just the kind of subject that needs the word weaponized,
right.
Though.
You got that, and then I think maybe a piece that preceded it by a little uses infernos as well. So, like, you're right on top of it.
Yeah. You have any questions for us? I mean, we're just all over you here so far, Luke.
I'm just desperate for content until the Stanley Cup final starts. So, I'm just trying to make people excited with my verbiage.
Well, one team you mentioned, which is part of the reason we wanted to talk, as a team that has cap room to really work with, is the Sabres. And I've got a question I want to wait on first, but just like, how do you look at the Sabres right now, Luke, with that in mind and just, you know, the longest drought in the league now? How bad is it? You could tell us that it's like really they're in bad shape, or maybe not.
I don't think they're in horrible shape. I just think, unfortunately, the fan base, and they probably don't want to hear this because they have been very patient and very loyal. And I just think more patience is required, especially when you consider the division the Sabres are in. You know, that one of the teams is about to play for the Stanley Cup. Another one is the Toronto Maple Leafs that has, you know, rebuilt properly and slowly in the right way, and they expect to be contenders. Florida now just got Joel Quenneville, and they're expected to make a major splash in free agency. You know, that the rumors about Bobrovsky and Panarin just won't quit. Montreal seems to be getting a little bit better. I just think the Sabres...
Didn't mention Tampa, Luke. You might get to them maybe too, right?
That goes without saying. I mean, yes, of course, Tampa. So there you go, the President's Trophy winners and the team with the best regular season record in the generation. So... it's a tough division, but what I really like about Buffalo is the fact that Botterill isn't acting like they're one or two pieces away. From everything I've read, every, you know, press conference I've seen him give, he's taking a slow and patient approach. I think he brought in a really interesting coach in Ralph Kruger. You know, they do have cornerstones at key positions in terms of a number one defenseman and a number one center that, you know, should be peaking around the right time. So, unfortunately, it's going to require a little bit of patience, and there's lots of holes to fill in. I really like the Brandon Montour deal. I think he took advantage of Anaheim's situation there, and I think that defenseman's best days are still ahead of him. So I think the moves are happening, and it may be slower than some people in Buffalo like, but I think the future will be bright.
You know, with that in mind, like Tampa and Buffalo seem like Tampa is one of these teams that's on the inferno list, and Mike already mentioned that Buffalo's on this list that could weaponize cap room. And so we've been seeing and hearing about Ryan Callahan. Big cap number, no production, and even ties to Rochester, if that matters, for this. So, If the Sabres were to work there, you know, whatever it is Tampa might be interested in, Rasmus Ristolainen or something else, would I rather get a player to plug into my second line like JT Miller, or should, with this patient approach you're suggesting that Botterill seems to be taking, think about younger guys who maybe aren't even in the league yet that could be better than JT Miller?
Yes. I think you're looking at Tampa's prospect pool, maybe some of their picks. But if I'm Botterill, I'm giving Julian Breezeball a call and maybe taking that Callahan contract off his hands, and in hopes that you can attach something young and enticing or a roster player to that. You know, I think Ryan Callahan is a great guy. He's just overpaid, and he was on the fourth line in Tampa and then sometimes even a healthy scratch. And a year ago, he had some significant injury issues. But he's reasonably healthy now. He's just expensive, but he could slide under the Sabres cap quite nicely, and I think he would be an excellent leader in that room and help guide some of the young guys. He does everything the right way. You know, I've talked to a lot of his teammates, both when he was with the Rangers and with the Lightning, and everyone speaks very highly of the guy. It's just, you know, he realizes that his price tag is just too high, and there's only one more year on it. And I think that actually lines up well with Buffalo, because they have another year until, I believe, Reinhardt's up again. That summer is the summer you can start talking about inking Dahlin into a long-term deal, and some other guys are up. So this is a year where, you know, if you're realistic and you don't think you're a contender, why not try to poach something valuable in addition to taking that Callahan contract off Tampa's hands? It's worth a phone call at least.
With Luke Fox of Sportsnet, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Luke, what do you think happens with Skinner?
I think he weighs all his options. I don't see why a guy would wait this long and not just wait it out another, what, month and 10 days or so, or whatever we have left until free agency. Once you've waited this long, I'm sure his agent saying, yeah, I know you're seriously considering Buffalo, but that interview period is only a few days away. We saw what happened with John Tavares. He invites everyone into the room. He gets the best pitches from everybody, and then he makes his decision. I don't think that means he's ruled out Buffalo because he hasn't re-signed yet, but I just think when you've come this far and you're his age and you put up the kind of numbers he put up, and, you know, I think next to probably Panarin, he's going to be the most valuable winger on the open market. Why not at least take the interviews and go from there? I'd be really interesting to see how much, you know, I heard some talk about he was wanting to see who the coach was, and of course you want to know who it is, but now that he knows who it is, I would love to know if Kruger kind of wowed him a little bit, mm-hmm. or swayed his decision at all, because I got a chance to interview him a few times, Ralph Kruger, when he was in Toronto for the World Cup in 16, and the man is an amazing speaker, and he's got some really creative viewpoints. He's a really interesting guy to talk to. So if you're going to have a coffee with a guy and you're a hockey player and you're considering whether you want to play for a man, I think he's the kind of guy that could convince you a little bit. But, you know, when Skinner's come this far, he wants to see what kind of term and dollars are on the table from all his potential suitors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always made sense. What's curious to me is that Jason Botterill last week, after he hired Ralph Kruger, was on our station and sounded more upbeat about, I don't know, he didn't say that they're going to avoid that, but he spoke in terms like, well, nothing's done until it's done, but I feel really positive about our conversations, and, you know, we've been good for Jeff, and Jeff's been good for us, and all that sort of stuff. There was really no hedging by Botterill, and I don't know, that could be for some reason that I can't think of, but it sounded to me like a guy talking who thinks he's going to get him signed before the window opens for him to leave.
Well, maybe it's closer than I think. You know, I'm just kind of putting myself in Skinner's shoes, and you know, I'm sure if he said I wanted to wait, Botterill's not going to say, "Well, you gotta do it in May or it's off the table." Mm-hmm. He respects the player and the fact that he wants to go through the process. I just think these careers are so short. There's the risk of injury. I just think you want all the information available to you before you commit your life to 7 years, 8 years, if it's Buffalo, perhaps. But that's great. That's great because if Buffalo is positive and if things are trending well and Jeff likes it there, I think it's a good fit because if he does walk, you know, then you start looking back and the trade that looks like a steal of a deal out of Carolina doesn't look so good. And you're out there hunting again because Jack Eichel, when you have that kind of talent, you need to surround him with a winger who can score. So now you're back hunting again. So if they are close, that's very positive.
With Luke Fox of Sportsnet here on WGR, you mentioned offer sheets in this article too, and even a couple names. Do you think that's coming in the league? Do you think this will be the offseason where we actually see offer sheets?
Well, I don't want to scream that we're going to see an offer sheet because we haven't seen one in years and years, and even when we have seen them, they've always been matched. It's so rare, but it's just kind of something fun for fans to talk about. I would be shocked, but if there is going to be a year, I don't see why this one wouldn't be it, just because some of the teams that are in that cap inferno, like I mentioned, are also the teams with critical RFAs to sign. And at the top of that list, in my mind, is Tampa with Braden Point. So do they move? Are they able to buy out or trade Callahan? Do they move a Killorn or a Tyler Johnson or JT Miller, one of these other players, in order to sign Point? Or do they risk, you know, letting a team who's desperate for a number one center come along and try and offer sheet Braden Point? Or Sebastian Aho in Carolina, why isn't he re-signed yet? That's very curious. You know, he's the franchise center that they've been looking for forever, and you know, it's obviously not done yet. So there's some big names out there. I still think those are long shots, just because the price tag to get a guy like that, you'd have to offer him something over $10 million a year, and the price tag is 4 first rounders, and it would take a GM with a lot of gumption to offer up 4 first rounders. But what I do think is possible is maybe that second tier, lower tier type of offer sheet. And I think guys at risk of that would be like a Kasper Kapanen or Andreas Johnsson in Toronto, where if you offer them, you know, in the 3 to 4 million, I think maybe it's 4 million, the cost is only a second rounder. And that's the kind of guy that Toronto's in such a cap crunch that they might not be able to match. Unless Kyle Dubas can strike a trade of one of those guys before the offer sheet window opens up, I think those guys are more at risk of that. Another name might be Kevin LeBlanc in San Jose. He might be one of those lower-tier offer sheets that people might take a look at because they have so many guys they need to resign.
There's different ways you can approach it, too. Like, just thinking about the big guys in Tampa and in Toronto with Mitch Marner, you know, you would offer sheet big money to those guys because the cap is a crunch for those teams. Carolina, I don't know what their cap situation is offhand here, sitting here right now, but that's a team that probably just doesn't want to spend all the money that they possibly can each year. And so you could like just put the pressure on them by signing Aho to a big, big number that is not palatable to them and see what happens.
Now, you're exactly right. They're actually one of the lowest cap teams, but they're a budget team. And it's really curious that he's not resigned yet. The GM needs a new deal. There's a lot of people, not just on the ice, but off the ice, that are looking for pay raises. And Tom Dundon has, you know, traditionally, even though it's only been a little while, drawn kind of a hard line in the sand. That's what he did with his RFAs last summer in Lindholm and Hanifin. And then he ended up trading them to Calgary for guys where he knew what their price was going to be because the negotiations weren't going well. So it's going to be really interesting with Tom Dundon at the helm, how the RFA negotiations go with Aho, because this is the kind of guy you can't let walk out the door. You know, he's a young talent. He plays center. He wasn't spectacular in the playoffs, but he's a type of learning curves you have to go through. But he's one of your best players, and he got you into the dance and broke the longest drought in the NHL up until that point. So you have to pay a guy like that, or else how are you going to attract anyone to your franchise if you show that you can't keep guys like that? So Carolina is going to be really fascinating to watch because, like you said, traditionally they are a budget team. Now, I do know that, season ticket renewal sales are already pumped up significantly because of their run this year, and they have attracted some new fans. But a lot of people are watching that situation closely because traditionally they haven't doled out a lot of money for players, coaches, GMs, any of that. And there's a lot of question marks there.
You know, Luke, the point you make, and we talked about it at the beginning, about patience and your hunch that, your sense that Jason Botterill will be patient here. We talk about that kind of thing all the time. I mean, the Sabres are 8 years since the playoffs. The Bills, too. You know, like, we're sort of stuck in this place where, you know, patience is good, but, you know, everybody's just kind of restless and whatever. And so we're always talking about that. And I think if I were Botterill, and maybe this goes without saying, the number one thing I would want to know for whatever my plan is going to be is, well, how much time do I have? You know, like, if I think Tim Murray acted like, and I think also just was the type where I don't think I'm going to be here for very long.
Yeah, he acted like his chair was on fire.
Yeah. And, you know, you saw what happened. Like, they went after it and, you know, didn't work. So, I mean, I think that's real, and I don't know what happens. Maybe Botterill knows that answer, but there's just been so many changes here. Everybody, I think, would agree that patience is better. That's what everybody would always want to stand for. I just think all the time about whether that's actually the case here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure how much rope the Pegulas are giving him, but I do think, you know, one of the quotes that stood out to me that he said this season is, we haven't arrived yet. And that wasn't that far off, you know, the really hot start the Sabres got on, and that obviously things tailed off from there. But just that he's realistic, and there are no quick fixes in the NHL. Teams that do, they flounder. You know, I'm thinking about Vancouver. They missed the playoffs, and then they went out and made a splash and signed Louis Erickson in the offseason, overspent on him, and they're regretting it now because they didn't realize that they were a team that needed to reset, that needed to rebuild. And yes, Botterill's inherited, you know, some other people's problems, but I do think he's going to take the right approach. Yes, how long of a rope does he have? I don't know. But another thing that stood out to me, and this is when he got hired, is we need to start fixing things even down in the AHL level in Rochester. And he started talking about, you know, his sense of that team is that there was a, sort of this divide between how closely the farm system was working with the big club. And that, I know he's gone to great lengths to try to improve that relationship and try to, you know, be teaching the same systems down there as they are in the higher level, so that when the young talent's ready, it's a smoother transition. Little things like that suggest that he's in it for the long haul.
Yeah, they have had better seasons, but they did get bounced both years, I think, and swept, actually, in both years, right out of the playoffs. So that was tough. But I think if you were grading objectively, I think you'd give him pretty good marks on following through on what you're talking about here with what he wanted to accomplish by sort of getting Rochester on track. I think that's worked so far mostly.
Yeah, and it's more about process than results when you're talking about the AHL team. I mean, yes, you want to create a winning culture and have success there, but it's more about, you know, are the right people running that organization? Are the guys who come up, are they more prepared than they were earlier? You know, getting something in the playoffs is a little bit secondary to, are we grooming these guys the right way? I have a question for you guys, though.
How
does the sense that in Buffalo about Ryan O'Reilly playing for the Stanley Cup? Are people supportive of him? Are they down on him? Or what's the sense there?
Well, it's going to be mixed. It's really, you know, in one way, it's embarrassing. I mean, this was, they traded for him, they signed him, and look at the return so far, Luke, right? Like, it's just not even just that he's in the finals, but it just really looks bad for the Sabres. You know, at the end of it, we talked about this a lot yesterday. I found a poll that I put up on Twitter from June of last year when we were starting to think that was going to happen. And it was for fans, do you hope Ryan O'Reilly gets traded? And 56% said yes, I think it was, and 44% said no. Like, it was pretty split then, but, you know, you've got this, you know, eight-year drought and a lot of restlessness, and that's kind of the whole point of the conversation here is how patient is right to be. And, you know, that was just a trade that people were kind of ready for that, and you got to trade somebody good or big to fix.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are again wondering what to do.
Yeah, I think you have a pretty good idea how it could be here. There's definitely a lot of course he's in the finals, and of course he's going to win the Selke Trophy because we had him and we traded him away. Like, woe is me. Nothing goes our way. Like, that's, you know, that's going to be a lot of places, but, again, 8 years without the playoffs will wear you out.
Yeah. Well, it'll just make the winning that much sweeter when it does come.
There it is.
That's nice. That's a great way to cap.
Let's end it.
That is spectacular. There it is.
Mic drop.
All right.
Thank you, Luke. Always a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Enjoy your evening.
Luke Fox, Sportsnet, at Luke Fox Jukebox. If I could go back, I would just change my name to that and have that. I would just take it.
One of my favorite Twitter handles is Luke Fox Jukebox.
I should be Mike Shope Jukebox. That's what
I
should be.
Doesn't really work, no.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Not as well.
Not really at all.
Not at all.
No.
That's right.
Yeah.
Got a thought on anything that we talked about with Luke? 803-0550. We'll talk more about Josh Allen. And part of that will be a conversation with Sal Capaccio, who brought up Mitchell Trubisky as a goal, in a sense, for Allen in his second season. What happened to Trubisky in his second year with the Bears? The number is 803-0550. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
GR.
Josh Allen, to me, I see a lot of special things about his game. I mean, we're talking about an arm that's in the same class as the Patrick Mahomes. Three games of almost rushing for 100 yards. I feel like if any other quarterback in football did that this year, every highlight show would have led with that talk. But because it's Josh Allen in Buffalo, it just wasn't sexy enough.
Oh, come on. What kind of a point is that? Josh Allen's rushing yards were not sexy enough to get more coverage? Were the games relevant? How about that question? Were they relevant games?
That's a part of the commentary. It's Buffalo. So it goes not just about the Buffalo market, but what their record was.
Well, he's making up. This is Chris Sims. It sounds like he's saying that the media is at fault for not, you know, being fair to Josh Allen, because if any other quarterback in the league did it, then it would have been a bigger story. Really? I don't know. It's hard for me. That was from yesterday, right? On One Bills Live, Chris Sims. Joe, we were saying before how Joe is good. Sneaky Joe is good.
Does a good job for us, yes.
And we have a guest at 4 o'clock most days, and he was calling. You look in the other room. There's Joe. He's on the phone. There's the one phone for the guests, and he's over there. He's sort of out of sight. You know, he's on the phone. He's calling the guest. And I just said to you, you know, one thing about Joe, and we've had lots of different producers, and many of them were also really good, but, like, it never happens that at 4 o'clock when Joe makes that call, the guy isn't there. He's always there.
Right. You said to me, I don't know what his process is, but that guy is always there.
The guy is always there. Like, that, you know, you're at the mercy of the other person, but still, like, you would want to know as a producer, what does this guy need? Does he need a reminder? Does he need a text message? Does he need an email? Does he need a call? Is that call 5 minutes beforehand? Is it the morning of? Is it, so if you call the morning of, are they sort of annoyed? Like, I know. And you don't want to lose that guy. So there's a lot to know,
right.
And everybody might be different. Yet, at 4 o'clock, every time we have a guest, it just seems like the guy is there and ready to go. And then as I'm telling you this, Joe goes, he needs a few minutes.
He's not ready.
He's not ready. It was only like 1 minute.
Right. He was almost right there. And he didn't even have time to tell this story before we started talking to him. What you thought was, I'll tell this story while Joe gets Luke Fox.
Yeah.
And instead, Luke Fox was right there, so the story had to wait until now.
Didn't even have time to tell it.
Right.
Right. And not to put a damper on the story, but Luke was there and ready to go, but we had a technical issue with the phone that we used for the guests.
See, that's another thing that can go wrong that just seems to never go wrong.
Yeah. Right.
But it did this time, for sure.
But it did this time, just briefly. Anyway, it's a compliment.
Thank you.
And yeah, right?
Like, yeah, oh, for sure, yeah. Do you usually follow up with people? Like, often we know days in advance these people are going to be on. Do you check in with them when you get here?
Every time, usually about like between 2 and 3 o'clock, I'll always send a text message. Just say, like, hey, double checking that you're going to go for 4 o'clock, and that's pretty much it.
I like that myself. When I'm going to be on, like, you know, we had Greg Brady on from Toronto the other day, and we've both been on his show numerous times. When I'm going to be on there, it's, you know, 7:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock, their producer sends me a message like, hey, man, you good? Like, yep, I'm all set. And even though I'm all set and ready, I still like that they do that because it's possible that I could get running around and who knows, and I could forget. So I like to get that reminder that, hey, you got this thing booked.
Now, it was funny. This happened a couple weeks ago with Ryan Lambert of Yahoo. And he actually tweeted out, hey, I'm going on a station. I'm not sure where that is. So I had texted him few days prior to arrange it, and then I sent that text message to him about like 2-3 o'clock, and I didn't introduce myself again because we had just texted each other a few days before, so I figured I didn't have to do that again. And he must have took that as, yep, I'm ready to go, and then didn't really know who he was about to come on with because he either forgot or he didn't have my number saved in his phone. So I thought that was funny, but generally it goes more smooth than that.
It seems to, yes.
Yeah.
Very good. I was talking to a guy today about gambling.
That's not like you.
I was actually, I'm going to skip ahead here for a second, and then I'll come back. Then I run into another guy that knows me from working here in the building, and he's like, I know you like to gamble. I mean, I like to gamble, but I don't really gamble. Like, I don't. I mean, I bet a little bit. I like the idea of it.
Right.
That's actually a lot of the conversation I had. And this guy is a listener who doesn't really know me. He's like, I know you like to gamble. Like, I wouldn't put it that way, like, about myself. I like the idea of it.
It's, yeah, but I think you should probably be willing to accept that it probably sounds to a lot of people like you like to gamble.
Yeah, I think probably it does, but, you know, it's not all the way. It's not really true. I think I should be allowed to.
Sure.
I think it should be legal, and it, you know, I guess it will be.
Lots of places.
we live in the worst state for stuff like this. You know, but the taxes are low, right, everybody? And the weather. Come on.
Right.
So, anyway, to the first story. So, I was having a conversation with a guy in our company about gambling. And, you know, he was kind of feeling me out. And he's like, so what kind of bets do you like to make then? Because I told him, I don't really bet games. And I said, well, futures bets are kind of fun. And I like to pick long shots because what's the fun of betting the Patriots? Mm-hmm. I don't want to root for that. You know, I'm a sports fan. I want upsets and it's the better challenge, the greater challenge of being right. Of course, there are upsets all the time. There are lots of, take the Stanley Cup playoffs. I bet 4 series in the first round, won them all, and they were all underdogs. Like, that's really fun. I like the glory part of that. So I mentioned the point about the Super Bowl, and he said, so who do you like this year for that? And I thought to myself, I have no idea. I don't know yet. I haven't really, but I didn't want to tell him that.
Right.
I didn't want to tell this guy in this conversation.
Someone was,
I don't
asking
know
you
yet.
Before Memorial Day, who's your, like, dark horse for the Super Bowl?
Well, it was in context of the conversation we were having.
Right, but
and
still,
I said, that's the kind of bet I like to make.
Yeah.
And he said, well, who do you like for that?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to tell him, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I just chose to try to wing it.
Okay, how'd that go?
And I'll tell you exactly what I said. I said, well, I like the, not a long shot really at all, but also not the favorite. I like the idea of Indianapolis. I mean, I just think that guy, I'm blanking on his name now. I'm thinking of the old guy's name, Grigson, the new guy. Like, he's just, Chris Ballard, right?
Yes.
He's just nailing it. I feel like the Colts GM is just nailing it. And they have Andrew Luck. Their quarterback is not, well, I don't know if he was sexy enough for highlights. Like, they have their quarterback, and he's legit. So, I like Indianapolis. But not really a long shot. And the guy, you know, comes in to say, I agree with that. I mean, the Colts are going to be, they're not going to be the favorite, but a lot of people are on them. I like that point. And then I thought, I need to say somebody else here, because that's not an answer to what long shot interests you this year. So I didn't even know the odds, and I think the guy told me 33-1, but I mentioned Atlanta, and I'm just winging it, right? Like, I'm like, well, I can think about Atlanta here, because of how defense is really unpredictable. And if their odds are, you know, greater because people think their defense is bad, they're going to have a lot of that offense. The offense has been really good.
Right.
Freeman comes back. We'll see what he gives them. But the quarterback is solid and the receivers and everything. Like they don't have Kyle Shanahan anymore, but, you know, they know what they're doing. And so Atlanta. And so that is like sort of my first pick.
Uh-huh.
And it was almost totally by accident. But isn't that kind of how they got to the Super Bowl the first time? I mean, 3 years ago or whatever? By, like, you know, their odds were just okay, probably.
Yeah,
and
right. Yeah.
For whatever reason.
They've been up and down for a few years. So they shouldn't be going in here as any kind of a favorite. But they're a team that certainly is capable. They've got a very potent quarterback, and they've got the stud receiver and an up and coming stud receiver in Ridley. Like they're nice. Yeah, they're nice.
How would you answer that if you were to wing it? Like, who would you come up with? The Bills?
I honestly, like, I'm a little mad at you that you ended up on Atlanta after you said Indianapolis, because when you started this, I thought, if I have to say something, I'm going to say Atlanta.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I swear to God. I mean, I hate them, but
that's funny.
Like, you know, I always do. I just open up all the teams. I'm just looking at them, and I'm like, you know, no, not an underdog, you know, whatever. Like, trying to find a team that fits it exactly, that could do it, but that probably isn't any kind of a heavy favorite. And Atlanta works there. Like, I don't know. In the same division, I feel like Carolina could be like that too, though. I'm not sure what their number is either, but I might like them. For that, you know, they probably don't have a huge, they're not, probably not that highly thought of. Newton's coming off of shoulder surgery. That would be a little scary. You know, he's not throwing yet. So that could deter the number from being, you know, very favorable for them. Favorable for a better, I mean. But, you know, anyway.
Carolina is 50-1.
Okay.
Atlanta was 33.
All right. So I might go the Panthers there.
Okay. I don't know. Joe, let me hear you on Newton, because, like, he again is what right now? Like, he's not throwing.
Right.
Like, there's always – it just seems like every year now there is this concern about him that, you know, is legitimate on or not. But, like, there is at least some reason to be concerned about his health.
Well, he has the same injury that Andrew Luck had 2 years ago, when the Colts talked as if he was going to be ready for the start of the regular season, and then he wasn't there at training camp, wasn't here preseason, and then he missed the entire season. It just grew into that. So I'd be worried about him if I were them, but at the same time, it sounds like it's going a little quicker than it happened with Luck. So, like I said, I'd be worried if I were a Panther fan or a fantasy owner of Cam Newton, but it sounds like he's going to play this season.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd still be worried.
What kind of number is there on the Steelers? They lost Bell. They lost Brown.
25-1.
Okay.
You like that?
Yeah.
I kind of like that, too.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't miss Bell. You know, Brown is another story. Like, that's, I think, harder to replicate, for sure.
Five teams are 25-1. Who do you like the most? Dallas, Houston, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, San Francisco.
I think I like Pittsburgh the most.
I think I will take Dallas first, I think. I think I would take Dallas. Minnesota's okay, but that's not bad either.
I kind of like Houston there. I kind of like Houston there.
Actually, I like San Francisco the most. Houston.
I'd like Houston or Pittsburgh. I'm kind of torn between the two, but
that coach is such a dolt for me, that Houston coach.
Yes, he is, but their roster is so good, and their only big issue is offensive line, and they seem to do a lot of stuff there. So if that's better, like, they're a really good roster, and I think that could overcome who their coach is.
Skill positions. What an awful playoff performance for them that was against Indy.
That's the thing, though. It's just like they just live to lose in the wild card round. So
they stink.
Yeah.
Come on, they stink. I'm going to up it.
They stink.
I'm going to escalate this. Right. They stink.
Yeah.
Houston.
I don't think they stink.
Get out of here, Houston. Yeah. I know they'll be on prime time, though.
Yeah. It was bad, no doubt. The 49ers are 25-1.
Yeah.
Wow.
Are you wondering how?
Kind of, yeah. Like, I was going to get to them with Atlanta, Carolina, and San Francisco and, like, sort of lump them in there, and I can't believe they're 25-1. I mean, I just don't. okay. Good luck with that.
Being like 25-1 and Atlanta's 33.
Yeah, right. And Carolina's, what did you
50?
Say? 50. Yeah, right. Okay.
Carolina and the Jets. Jets are also 50. You think the Jets or the 49ers should have better odds? 49ers?
I think
can you really say the Jets?
Yeah, I think the 49ers should have better odds. The Jets, I mean, I don't know, man.
I could talk myself into them.
The schedule's soft. It's, you know, same schedule as the Bills. Only even a little worse, right? Because they were below the Bills.
Yep.
So the crossover shouldn't be as. But I just Gase. I don't know. He just seems like he is flammable to me. I don't know if he writes everything there and is the whisperer for Darnold. It will blow me away. I think that guy is walking around in a kerosene suit. I just think he's going to blow up.
There is – I don't really have a rebuttal. I mean, I just think with him getting that job, like, who are the Jets to earn any credibility? But how did he get to Miami? You know, like, he was somebody kind of cool. And there were so many weird things with them, and he was fired. But they went to the playoffs with him. I don't want to rule out – I wouldn't rule out the possibility – of that guy just sort of making it work with them. I mean, I would neither bet on it, but the Jets are tough for me. Like, I sort of feel it a little bit with them, but the Gase point is reasonable. And Bell, I'm the guy who will tell you don't need Le'Veon Bell, and then they go and do that, and who knows if Gase even wants him. I mean, right. There are a lot of questions.
Yeah, I think it's a weird – there's I don't know. He just – I don't trust that. Is really what it comes down to. I don't trust him. I'm skeptical. You're gonna have to really shut me up.
50-1 though, you got to run across the street naked with somebody. I mean, if you're gonna bet somebody at 50-1, there's gamble in it. Literally,
I would get way all over Carolina at 50-1 before
really?
I would go near Adam Gase and the Jets. Yes.
I just really dislike that. I mean, not compared to the Jets, but the Panthers.
Yeah.
Not for me this time. Aren't they good every other year though? Carolina, like that, they have yeah, every other
yeah,
year.
Okay, and this would be on. Last year wasn't good, right?
Not great.
No.
Sal Capaccio coming up in less than 15 minutes. We'll talk about Josh Allen with Sal. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR.
We got two more pair of tickets for this show that is tomorrow night at the Darien Lake Amphitheater. This is Chris Young. Two pair of tickets, 644-9878, callers 5 and 6. Minimum value of this prize is $80, courtesy of the nice folks at Live Nation. General contest rules apply. You can still buy tickets at livenation.com.
We only have a couple of minutes here, then we'll talk to Sal. Would you care to mention Owen's new opportunity?
Owen, last Friday I was away because in Syracuse, the top, I don't know, 50 players or so in his age group, birth year 2002, so 17 years old, had a development camp, an exposure camp, whatever. They played games for 3 days, and he was chosen as the goalie. There was only one goalie out of four that was chosen. There are a couple of alternates. He's chosen as the top goalie in his age group to now take part in a USA Hockey National Development Camp, which will be here at the end of June.
It's kind of cool that it's here.
Yeah, it is.
Could be anywhere.
Really convenient. That's right. That's right.
So that's the state?
Last weekend was the state. This thing now is USA Hockey, so it's the best players in his age group from the all across the country will be here competing.
Right. What group did he qualify from? From
the New York State.
A state group.
New York State. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right, very good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like
will you go to it?
It's funny. We have tickets to this 3-day Wilco Festival that's at the tail end of that. So my wife has convinced me that I should go to that with Leo. So I'll be here for the start of it. It's like it's almost a week long. So I think I'll see the front end of it, and then she'll stay with him and get him around at that. So I don't even know how many players will be in his. My impression is that it thins out as you get older because he's done this state camp since he was 14, and like the first year there might have been 200 kids, and then at 15 there were 150, and then last year there were 100, and now this year there were only 50 at the state level, and I imagine that it runs somewhat concurrent to that nationally. So
you can't have so many kids at that.
Right.
I mean, you have to have some
right
ability to really judge them.
Yeah. So I'm super proud of him. I mean, it's barely been 2 years since he played his first AAA hockey game. And so it's been a pretty, you know, slow and steady before that, but this has been pretty quick. So I'm super happy about that. It's a great opportunity for him.
All right. We'll see how Sal's kid's doing. When I'm not here to tell you about mine either. I'm not standing next to you.
I appreciate you asking about
that. We'll talk to Sal Capaccio after sports. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.